This episode is brought to you by Chris Salee, your local health markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Personalized advice at 503-678-5768.
This episode is also brought to you by our good friends at Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, they've been a place to grow, connect, and serve. If you're looking for a church to participate with virtually during this COVID-19 lockdown, you can find their streaming services Sundays at 9 a.m. on their website or their Facebook page, and check in with their Facebook page throughout the week for encouragement, service times, and other good news. Visit them at canbyfoursquare.com or search Canby Foursquare on Facebook.
Welcome to the Canby Now podcast,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey, friends, and welcome to this episode of the Canby Now podcast. I'm James Walton. Let's read the news. Face coverings will soon be required for children 5 and older in indoor public spaces, including at school and at outdoor gatherings where a minimum of 6 feet of physical distancing may be difficult to maintain, Governor Kate Brown announced Wednesday morning. The announcement removes an earlier exemption that recommended but did not require face masks to be worn by children 12 and under in indoor and outdoor spaces, as well as the Oregon Department of Education's previous guidance that face coverings would not be mandated for public school students. The mandate does not exempt those who are unable to wear a face covering due to a medical condition or disability. Governor Brown said the expanded mandate followed the guidance of the Oregon Health Authority officials, who agree the novel coronavirus is spreading too quickly in the state. When we see numbers rise, we must respond, she said. We must dim the lights. We must scale back, limit our interactions, take more precautions. Later in the press conference, Dr. Dean Seidlinger, the state's top epidemiologist, explained that the expanded mandate for children was based on new research from South Korea, where schools have reopened. It remains to be seen the impact the new rule will have on the Canby School District as local officials continue to work on their plans for reintroducing students to the classroom this fall. The governor also rolled back limits on gathering sizes in large indoor venues where physical distancing can be maintained, including large restaurants, churches, community centers, and theaters, from 250 to 100. Statewide limits on outdoor gatherings will remain at 250 at this time. The earlier restrictions limit indoor social get-togethers to no more than 10 people. Those will also stay in effect with no changes. We know that indoor gatherings pose a much higher risk than outdoors, and large groups can easily become super spreader events if safety precautions are not followed, the governor said. We need to avoid this in order to save lives. And though this does not change things for Clackamas County establishments, which are still at phase one of the governor's reopening plan, bars and restaurants in other counties will not be required to close at 10 p.m. Before this announcement, these businesses had been allowed to remain open till midnight in phase two counties. The governor acknowledged that further restrictions on bars and restaurants will likely lead to even tighter profit margins and more challenges as they attempt to stay afloat. She called on Oregonians to follow the guidelines of social distancing, wearing a face covering and frequent hand washing to slow the spread of the virus, again threatening a second and perhaps even more devastating shutdown of businesses if cases continue to rise at their current rates. I do not make these decisions lightly, and there are no easy choices, she said. It's up to all of us to do our part to look out for one another. Oregon, we are going to get through this together. all of the changes will take effect Friday, July 24th. After surging to the top of the list of highest case counts in Clackamas County, primarily because of a large outbreak at Marquis Hope Village last month, Cambie has remained there because of community spread, a term used by public health officials to mean new infections that cannot be linked to any known outbreak at a workplace or gathering. In the Oregon Health Authority's latest report Wednesday, there were no new cases reported for Marquis Hope Village for the third straight week. Yet, 17 new confirmed cases of the novel coronavirus were linked to the Cambie zip code, bringing the total to 41 for that three-week period. 17 also appears to be the highest weekly increase the community has seen that couldn't be tied to Marquis Hope Village, which remains the second largest outbreak of COVID-19 at an Oregon long-term care facility, with 112 cases and 11 deaths. Cambie has now seen 159 confirmed cases, the second highest in the county behind Oregon City's 171. Cambie's per capita infection rate, though, is much higher because of the population differences, 70 per 10,000 residents versus 33 for Oregon City. Cambie's infection rate is almost exactly twice that of the state's, which is 35 cases per 10,000 Oregonians. Malala also has a high infection rate of 38 cases per 10,000, which is the second highest in the county. Only one small workplace outbreak has been tied to the area this month, 6 cases at the Interfor Lumber Mill. Its total cases are at 58, up 3 from the previous week. Wilsonville saw 14 new cases in the week ending Sunday, July 19th. Its total rose from 47 to 61, with an infection rate of 29 per 10,000 residents. Statewide, the percentages of tests that came back positive have increased from 6.2% to 6.6%. Hospitalizations have increased since beginning of June, but the daily admissions of 15 to 20 are still below the March and April peaks of 20 to 25 per day, despite reported daily case counts being more than 3 times as high. Officials said this is most likely due principally to detection and testing that has greatly improved since the early days of the pandemic and an increased infection rate in the young, healthy people who are at much lower risk for hospitalization or death. In Oregon, half of all cases are from people under the age of 40, and those in their 20s and 30s are now the group most likely to get sick with COVID-19. ICU bed usage remains well below capacity statewide. The Oregon Department of Transportation is currently in the design phase of a $9 million project to fully repave and reconstruct Highway 99E between Pine Street and Berg Parkway in Cambie. That's essentially from Cambie's Builder Supply to the Wild Hair Saloon south of town. The project is also intended to provide pedestrian upgrades and some aesthetic refreshments to one part of town that sorely needs it, with new signs, signal loops, pedestrian push buttons, and reconstructed sidewalks and curb ramps. ODOT says these improvements will remove ruts and damage from vehicles and increase safety and accessibility. The project is scheduled to go to bid in September 2021, according to ODOT regional spokeswoman Caitlin Jackson. Construction will likely occur in 2022, she told the Cambie Now podcast in an email, adding that the schedule has not been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Some ODOT projects will be impacted from financial losses stemming from the pandemic, however. The State Highway Fund is facing an estimated loss of $170 million due to the coronavirus-related economic downturn in the 2020-21 biennium. Because the state's projected economic recovery will extend into 2024, losses are expected to total as much as $250 million in lost revenue from 2020 to 2024, when compared to the October 2019 forecast. This amount is split between the cities, counties, and ODOT, so the impact will be felt statewide. Most road projects, though, are paid for with federal dollars and with money allocated by the legislature to specific projects, so it can't be used for anything else without a legislative change. The Highway 99E repaving and redesign, for example, has been on the books for several years already. Once known as the Great Pacific Highway and even the Road of 10,000 Wonders, Highway 99E is a vital part of the region's transportation system and Cambie itself, dividing the community neatly in two and serving as a major touch point in its history. It brings thousands of cars and trucks through Cambie every day, connecting the city with its neighbors and the wider world. But its deteriorating quality is a source of near constant complaints, and though it boasts several historic buildings and a certain blue-collar charm, it has not graced the cover of many tourism brochures. Even a downtown consultant who studied the community last year admitted Highway 99E is, quote, not a great road, and suggested it may deter potential visitors. Cambie Disposal appeared before the City Council last week to seek a rate increase for the first time in more than 5 years, and it was a doozy. Garbage rates will go up 20% by the spring, an increase that has been divided into two separate hits to hopefully lessen the impact on customers during a time of economic strain for many. The average single-family residential customer will see a $2.47 increase on the first part of September, followed by another $2.48 bump on March 1, 2021. By then, the monthly cost of a 35-gallon cart with curbside pickup will have gone from its current rate of $24.61 to $29.56. Andy K. Hoot and Steve Donovan of Cambie Disposal appeared before the Cambie City Council during a virtual meeting last week to explain the increase. Much of the blame rests with China, which announced in 2018 that it would no longer pay for recycling from the United States and other wealthy countries because of the high quantities of food and other contaminants in the waste stream, rendering much of the material unusable. Because of reports of ocean pollution, trash haulers in Oregon have also agreed not to send their recycling to alternative countries, including Indonesia and the Philippines. Everything is staying in North America, Canada, and the United States, said Kay Hoop, whose father Fred established Cambie Disposal in 1974 and pieced together the Kay Hoop Waste Services family of companies. And that, unfortunately, is very expensive. Donovan said the cost of hauling a ton of recyclable material has risen to $138, and many believe it will soon reach $150. By way of comparison, those same materials, or any other, could be landfilled at a Portland metro area transfer station for only $97 a ton. Recycling has already been severely curtailed in many large cities, including New York City, Houston, Chicago, Boston, and Los Angeles. These cities still consume just as many potentially recyclable materials, of course, they just go straight to the dump. The Portland metro area has been largely spared that route so far thanks to the presence of regional mills and plants that can still accept, and are willing to pay for, mixed paper and other recyclables. But the costs have gone up and will likely continue to rise. Kahoot said the cost spike from China's decision was the largest he's seen in 30 years in the garbage business. Donovan became poignant at one point, describing the prosperous dream that recycling had once been. It was to be a huge moneymaker for garbage haulers, a perpetual motion machine where we would put water in the front end and wine would come out the back end. The reality has been quite different. I'm going to tell you the truth here, he said. For the last 20 years, we've been exporting our pollution to China, and the same ship the pollution came off of comes back to us loaded with VCRs and flat-screen TVs. That was a virtuous cycle for America for a long time, but it's not going to be like that anymore. Cambie Disposal, which has an exclusive franchise agreement with the city, has not requested a rate increase since 2014, and that was only 2%. The 20% increase was approved unanimously by the Cambie City Council. Members of the Cambie High School band will play a featured role in the upcoming Netflix film All Together Now, starring 19-year-old Aulili Cruvallo, the lead actress from Disney's 2016 hit Moana. Along with the Hawaiian-born starlet, the film features the talents of Fred Armisen, well-known, particularly in our neck of the woods, for Portlandia and Saturday Night Live, Carol Burnett, Renzi Feliz, Judy Reyes, and Justino Machado, Taylor Richardson, and Gerald Waters. based on the Matthew Quick novel, Sorta Like a Rockstar, Altogether Now, is a teen drama that tells the story of an optimistic and musically gifted high schooler, played by Cravalho, who dreams of going to Carnegie Mellon University. Cary Garrett, a recent graduate of Canby High School and a former band member, said the film's casting director called CHS back in October because they needed a high school band with the colors blue and gold. The band discussed the offer and ultimately accepted. 30 students from the Wind Ensemble were selected to participate as extras, along with 8 who would play a larger role in the production. Though she couldn't say much about the unreleased picture, Garrett did reveal that she was part of this second group. These students filmed for 3 days straight, Garrett said, explaining these parts were filmed at the old Concord Elementary School building in Milwaukee. This was the best part of filming, in my opinion. During that time, the students met most of the cast, including Cravalho, Feliz, Richardson, Waters, and Armisen. We got to see what they are like without the acting, and they're the most amazing people, Garrett said. What's also amazing is Fred Armisen used to be in a band, so he was super happy to see us playing. He even signed and autographed our drum set. The filming of the larger group of Canby High School band members took place at Oregon City High School. Garrett said it was an unforgettable experience for the students who got an inside look at the making of a major motion picture. Oh, it gave us insight into how much effort goes into putting on a movie, she said. We got to see every part of the industry, from makeup, hairstyling, costume designers, to the camera filming, the special effects, to even hearing the sound of the clapperboard. Garrett called it an amazing experience, and meeting the famous actors was, in the words of the enthusiastic teen, super cool. The film is directed by Brett Haley, who previously helmed the Netflix teen romance All the Bright Places, among other projects. Altogether Now premieres on Netflix on August 28th, 2020.
Hey Frankie, do you ever wonder why some businesses aren't like more transparent?
Oh yeah, like some of the old buildings downtown are so dark. Get some more windows, you know?
No. I mean, like, transparent as in being open and honest about their business practices.
Oh.
Yeah, like DirectLink is a good example. They don't have internet data caps or charge extra fees for high usage.
Oh, yeah, which is great with all the internet I've been using since this whole COVID situation started.
They also don't charge infrastructure build fees like some other providers, and they're active in our community, too. Check out their philanthropic efforts at directlink.coop/community.
Did you know that they also hold an annual meeting every year where members can talk directly with the board of directors and upper management?
Talk about transparent. You won't see any other companies being that accessible. DirectLink really is here for us. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop to learn more today.
Joining us on the Canby Conversation today are Bethany and David Zito. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Why don't you tell us where we are right now?
So we're in the bakery. We're in the bake shop, and we are, what's today, Tuesday? We are 3 days from opening.
So exciting. So Bee's Bake Shop, we're here in the Dahlia next door to Wayward, or Canby Gifts, and then Wayward Sandwiches on the corner there. This has been, tell us about the process of the past few months.
So the past few months, it's just been waiting for permits, construction,
right.
Waiting for another permit, construction.
3 to 4 months ago, this was just an empty concrete vanilla shell, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. What, end of February was when, or beginning of March was when I think it all kind of started.
And there really wasn't anything else going on news-wise in March. Yeah.
No, nothing at all at the end of March.
nice, quiet spring we had. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a journey.
The
but
permits a challenge can be sometimes.
Yeah, they took a little longer, and just everything took a little bit longer
right.
due to COVID, and there were definitely a couple delays that happened because of that, but.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So Bethany, you are a trained and professional baker who've been working in that industry for a long time.
Yeah.
First-time business owners, both of you, right?
Yes.
So you had this vision for the types of food that you wanted to create and the type of atmosphere you wanted to create, and then coming into this having to do all the other things that maybe you didn't know about. What has that been like?
Well, it's been a learning curve, and at least I've had time to learn those things as I go. But yeah, definitely there's a lot more sanitation involved, a lot more thought process of...
Even the actual construction and layout?
Yeah, you know, that we actually got a little lucky in that sense that COVID happened. Like, we had made our decisions and our plans, then COVID happened, but construction hadn't started yet. So we were able to tweak our plan because, you know, people were saying it would only last a month or two, but thank goodness, well, not thank goodness, but it hasn't, and we were able to modify our plan to go along with it.
Yeah.
We were going to have another bar counter in the window. We were going to do, what else were we going to do different?
We were having counter seating up there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, we have to hold off on counter seating.
Friday, yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. I was like, okay.
Soon.
Okay, thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah.
The community is eager to support.
Yeah, now that it actually looks like a bake shop, we've been getting quite a few people every day like, oh, are you open? When are you open? And just, but it's been great to be able to meet people that way.
I wanted to lock the doors, but I've had bad experiences of being locked. No, I'm just kidding. Not being able to leave.
Yeah.
I thought I put enough signs up, but I guess not.
Yeah.
Sometimes they just, people don't read signs. They try the door. If it's, it doesn't matter if it says closed, open, whatever.
That's true.
If the door opens, you're open.
Yeah, exactly.
A couple episodes ago, we did an interview with this farm. Obviously, completely different business, but a wedding venue that obviously very impacted by COVID as well.
And
they were just in that process of getting started when the pandemic hit. And we asked them, you know, obviously this must have just been a huge blow to you, but similar to you guys, it was actually because they were just getting started. So obviously it changed their plans, but it didn't change investments or things. You know, they were able to adapt because they were still at the top of that kind of peak, you know, heading down. So.
Yeah, that's how we feel. We've been able to adapt along with COVID, and we've been able to learn the procedures and standards as we are getting ready to open, so that way when we open, we're comfortable.
Yeah.
Rather than like, bam, you have to figure it all out right now.
Right.
Close for weeks.
At least that's on our side.
Yeah.
Tell me some of the nuts and bolts, or nuts and berries, I guess. what things will actually look like here? What the experience will kind of be like? Obviously, people listening to this are eager to come out and support as well. So give them a little taste, if you will, of what to expect.
When you walk in, there's some tables set up, and as long as we don't move backwards, we'll be able to utilize those tables.
Yeah.
And we'll have all of our display pretty much right as you walk in. You can see all the dry goods, and there's a refrigerated pastry case where we'll have some other sorts of treats like the candy bars and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then, we have two giant blackboards that'll have the menu and specials.
Very diner feel? Is that something you were going for a little bit?
Not necessarily diner feel.
Okay, sorry.
No. I do see that maybe like contemporary diner.
Yeah. Okay. We'll be in the middle there. Coffee.
Yes. Coffee, breads, lots of bread, sourdough, the pretzels.
Yeah. World famous already.
Yeah. Right.
Pretzels.
Serving with a cheese sauce.
Yeah, we're gonna be making a cheese fondue and a mustard. That you can order the pretzels plain, or you can order it as a plate and get all the dips.
I made I think it was a St. Patrick's Day one time a few years back that I first tried beer cheese, and I've made it a bunch of times since, and it's never tastes the same, but it's always good.
So,
so I'm known for that.
Beer cheese, that's good. You should try it as a soup sometime.
Yes.
It depends on how much beer myself has drunk, and how much ends up in the so that's part of the reason that it fluctuates, but
that's funny. what else? There will be a selection of breakfast pastries, and I just spun my first batch of ice cream today.
Early morning hours. Opening at 7.
Yeah, we're going to open at 7.
So you're going to be catering to some of that probably working crowd on their way to work, grab and stuff like that. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And then we're staying open until 6 for now, just to see where, see if we get interest that late at night, because we are having more dessert-y type things too. And we want to also capture the crowd that they don't want to stop on their way to work because, you know, I literally roll out of bed and go straight to work. I don't want to take 20 minutes to stop.
Right.
Not trying to turn anyone off from that.
Right.
But I feel like trying to capture the PM crowd, people on their way home. Oh, I want to go get a loaf of bread, but I don't have to wake up early. So trying to capture that crowd on the way home. And we have more desserty things too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, or people working swing shifts or whatever, where that is their morning.
Right? Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, heading into the hospital or whatnot.
Right, so. Yeah. There are so many like different shifts and schedules nowadays that it's... It's not, I don't know, it's not cut and dry anymore.
I think that's cool. I think that's a good idea to sort of start big and you can always cut back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, start small and then try and spin up. I mean, that doesn't work, you know, or whatnot.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
So what has the support been like from the community? We saw somebody trying to break in here. maybe from the business community, the city, or just people in general.
I don't have any negative things to say at all. Like, the city has been so fantastic to work with, so helpful, so supportive, and like I think someone reaches out like every few days. I'll give a shout out to Greg Parker. He stops in. Councilman, he stopped in and said hi a bunch of times, and he's been a big help and support. Business wise, Matt and Justin over at Wayward and all of them, they're great, and Can Be Gifts, they're super sweet, and a lot of support from the community.
Yeah, definitely.
So, it's...
I'm excited to see this little business community blossoming here in the
Dahlia.
And in greater downtown Canby, but
I really want to see downtown Canby grow business-wise.
Well, let's make David talk a little bit. What do you think, Bethany?
Sure.
He's just sitting over there not saying anything. So what has your involvement been like, and maybe kind of what have you seen from Bethany or how she's grown through this process?
Well, she definitely started out doing a lot more of the research. I still had to focus on my full-time job, so I'm a little later to the game getting things in here, but...
And what do you do, if you don't mind my asking?
Nothing, no.
Right.
What's your background? Yeah, so I've been a savory chef for the last about 15 years experience.
Okay,
So yeah, we've been talking about our ideas and plans for a couple years, and every now and then we just talk about what we want to do, what we want to see in the bake shop, and how we can make that happen. I've had more involvement more recently in getting things together and getting all the pieces put together. That's been fun and a learning curve as well. Definitely don't have the point of sales experience that we needed to make that easier. But looking forward to putting our spin on the things we like to make and hope people enjoy them as well.
Yeah. Do a lot of the recipes come from you, Bethany, or is it a little mix of you guys coming together? Is it like a reality show where, you know, you make something and then he has to taste it and judge it, or just what's it like?
pretty much all the recipes are mine. When we start venturing into some of our other concepts like Friday night dinners and whatnot, that'll be a little more David.
Yeah.
What are Friday night dinners?
Oh, TBD.
Okay.
Tease you a little bit. For the most part, the recipes are mine. If I try something new out, I definitely am like, hey, try this. How's the size? And we look at it together and figure out how much it should sell for, if I should change anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We both definitely critique each other, I think usually in a nice way.
usually
depends on how long the week has been, by Friday night dinner.
They've all been recipes I've changed or just created on my own through the times.
Will you be offering on your menu like breakfast sandwiches and things like that, or is it more the breakfast pastries?
We will be doing sandwiches. We're gonna take 2 or 3 weeks just to execute what we know how to execute.
And we start experimenting.
Place and everyone got a good flow and staff knows what's going on.
Exactly. Staff, that's a huge part. Like, as much as we feel overwhelmed, we don't want to overwhelm them either.
Yeah.
So Yeah, the goal is to do some biscuit, croissant, English muffin, breakfast sandwiches, and then for lunch we'll probably do like we came up with a fun term, but essentially a stuffed pita sandwich.
Yeah, something along those lines.
That sounds good. That says what's on the tin, so let's just go with that.
Yeah. but yeah, that'll happen down the road.
A bita?
Pita.
Yeah, had a good name. Pita. I can't think of it.
Was it a stuffy? That
might have been.
Yeah.
Something. I don't remember. But yeah. Well,
we might have
worked on that. Something like as seen on TV. You know, that you would see on the clearance rack.
Yeah. Right.
It's like something you wear, but it's made out of stuffed animals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Love it. I think that makes a lot of sense. I listened to a podcaster who sort of like an entrepreneur, works with people opening bakeries and stuff, and that's one thing that he says, like, you have to get the bread and butter down, right? Like,
yes.
If you're a cookie place, like, you have to have a really good chocolate chip cookie before you try to, you know, if you're donuts, you gotta have a really good, you know, just regular glazed donut.
Definitely.
You know, before you try. So
Is it
the pretzels that you think is kind of your bread and butter, what you'll be known for, or what do you think, the breads, or?
Yeah,
still your specialty?
A little bit of both, yeah.
Well, since I've done a few farmers markets and the pickups that I was doing pre-farmers market, just after COVID, definitely the pretzels. Those have taken off.
In a way you didn't expect?
Yeah, actually, yeah. Like I mean, I love the pretzels. I think they're delicious, and I don't know. Maybe
you weren't expecting people to say things like I do, which is like they are amazing. Yeah, they're like the best thing. Like I dream about them.
Yeah, I never expected that actually.
They've
done very well for sure.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you expect just like. Basically, a pretzel is just like a delivery vehicle for salt. It's really, you know, that's just all you're looking for. If it can just do that, but you've got this like amazing like texture. This like there's more to it than that,
which is
not what you expect. And really, I mean, you'd be happy with just the salt. That's why you show up. But
yeah,
you've got so much more going on. I love it.
Yeah, thanks. They're really good. They're nice and chewy, and so definitely the pretzels. I also think the breads in general. Pretzels, breads, the candy bars, I think, are going to be a big hit.
Yeah.
Opening day this coming Friday, we'll have the s'mores candy bars like I've had, but we're rolling out an almond joy, spelled with two Y's, just for the trademark.
Oh, yeah. Don't have lawyers showing up the first day, right? I love that almond joy, Gayla.
Yeah, so my version of an almond joy will be there, too.
Awesome. I'll have to try that. What has been your biggest challenge, you think, in this process? You can't say COVID. too easy.
Yeah, that's too easy. That's a given.
That's like Sunday school, just saying, God.
Yeah.
Well, our hood system was one of our big hangups, personally.
Hood system?
Yeah.
Yeah, just sourcing that or finding a supplier for that?
Just coming up with, like, how to vent the place. Mm-hmm. It was a little difficult just because of the structure of the space already. And trying to figure out the best way to vent the space that wouldn't affect residents upstairs. Some people would love waking up to the smell of baking bread. If I accidentally burn something, nobody wants to wake up to that.
Right.
And I would hate to hinder any of the tenants upstairs. So yeah, I think all in all, the hood system was hard, but it's up and it's great and it's going to be great.
Yeah. Cool. So people are listening to this on a Thursday. You guys are doing your soft opening Friday, July 24th.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is that going to look like?
So it'll probably be a little hard. There's going to be a lot of mistakes as we work through systems and train employees and trying to judge how much we need, how much product we need to make.
Yeah, big question mark.
Yeah. It'll essentially be normal service.
Yeah.
We just ask for a little patience for that first week.
You will get it. Yeah.
I'm
Don't
sure,
be
yeah.
about that.
Yeah.
Having tons of grace with people with everything that's going on, right. Especially restaurants. You poor restaurants.
Yeah, well, sort of used to it by now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that it'll more or less be normal.
Okay. And hours, days.
Yep, our normal schedule will open at 7, close at 6, and then we'll also do Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Okay.
And then our Saturdays we open at 8.
Okay.
Just because, I don't know, most people sleep in a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we're closed Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Okay.
And then we'll open Thursday, Friday again, and then Saturday, August 1st, will be like the grand opening.
Ribbon cutting.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe some ribbon cutting. We'll
right.
see if crowds allow.
I've seen the chamber is doing like a virtual thing or like a day
yeah.
of support where
yes.
they're encouraging chamber members to come like in smaller groups or
yeah.
individually and support you guys, but not as on mass.
Yeah, not a big
yeah.
old yeah.
Yeah.
party. Yeah. Pack 100 people in here. Like
right.
It, so.
Yeah. Try to spread out the crowds throughout
yeah.
the day.
Awesome. You got a website up and going now, social media? You
mm-hmm.
want to shout those out?
Yeah. So social media is Bee's Bake Shop.
With two P's and an E.
Two P's and an E, correct, yeah.
Right.
And then
fancy.
The website, yeah, you know, kind of ties in the bakery feeling, but also
yeah.
the patisserie feeling.
Yeah, it's very sort of nostalgic and old school, which I think will be a big hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. I think so for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. The website is Bee's Bake Shop, PPE, .com.
Mm-hmm.
I was lucky. I was nervous that the domain
some
wouldn't be available and I'd have to get creative, but there it was. So
right,
the
right.
site is up. We're still working on it a little bit, but we've got something up there.
Yeah, have to do a set with like three P's or something.
Yeah.
Something
Thank goodness we didn't have to do that.
Yeah, we lucked out there.
Last question. What are you most excited about?
Seeing our vision come to light and
yeah,
letting people try all our delicious goodies, the things we like, and hopefully share our delicious goodies with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Taking our passion and just putting it out in the world, and hopefully everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, yeah. Finally seeing the fruits from all this labor
yeah.
in
yeah.
3 months, finally be able to do what all this was for.
Yeah.
Right? Just making people happy, bringing some of your the things that you make to bring joy to people. So.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah, I've been spending like the past couple of days prepping in the kitchen, and it just feels right being in there.
Yeah.
And it's felt a little uncomfortable up until now, just because this is new for us. But stepping behind the butcher block, the bread bench, and just prepping felt good again.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I admire you bakers. You take such simple things, you know, flour and water and, you know, sugar, salt, things that humanity has been using for thousands of years
yeah.
to make it into something that it sustains people and brings happiness to people.
Yeah.
And I especially admire your guys' courage for,
for
doing this in this time.
Yeah.
I trust and fully believe it's going to be a good decision. The community is going to come out and support. Thank you guys so much for taking time out to talk to us.
Thank you,
yeah,
Tyler.
Definitely.
Yeah, we'll see you as soon as you open.
Yeah,
yes.
Awesome.
See you then.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with 3 realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate, and we got in a carriage ride with the horse, and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And
yeah.
sometimes it's a couple months. Sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career.
Mm-hmm.
Clients that have bought and sold maybe two, three, four, five homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
All right, friends, our episode this time is going to draw towards a close with this edition of Can Be Then, which is brought to you by The Book Nook, Canby's amazing local bookstore and gift shop. It's your source for new and used books, comic books, audiobooks, vintage books, children's books, and you get the idea. It's all things books across from the backstop in downtown Canby. Now, it's the highlight of every August in Clackamas County and has been for over a century on just about every year but this one. But we are not here to talk about this year. This is Can Be Then, and history is the name of the game. So today's topic, of course, is the Clackamas County Fair, the crown jewel of Canby's summer events calendar, and a source of fun, nostalgia, fond memories, and perhaps even a regret or two the next time you step on the bathroom scale. But it's the county fair. It comes but once a year, and it is not the time to be quibbling over calories. If you see a sign for deep-fried ice cream on a stick or hand-battered pizza dog smothered in hot cheese sauce, you get in line, because that's not a menu item you're likely to see at Gwyn's Coffee House or even the Daring Wayward Sandwiches, two outstanding establishments. But before the mind-bending taste configurations of the food court, before the bright lights and the screams of the midway, there was simply the Clackamas County Fair. A few prize hogs, some vegetables and pies, and the chance to celebrate a summer of labor well spent. Though the fair has been associated with Canby seemingly since the beginning of time, residents may be surprised to learn that the first fair was actually held in Gladstone. That city's founder, Judge Harvey Cross, had been convinced to lease sizable acreage to the Chautauquas, an adult education and social movement that was sweeping the nation at the time. The newly formed Willamette Valley Chautauqua Association there established Gladstone's Chautauqua Park, which hosted an annual summer assembly with performances, lectures, and concerts, and which would grow to be the third largest permanent Chautauqua Assembly Park in the United States. William Jennings Bryan, an accomplished orator, lawyer, and 3-time Democratic candidate for president, but who is perhaps most famous today for arguing against evolution and Clarence Darrow in the 1925 Scopes Monkey Trial, drew a crowd of 6,000 to Gladstone's Chautauqua Park in 1896 to hear him give his popular lecture, The Prince of Peace, which stressed that Christian theology, through both individual and group morality, was a solid foundation for peace and equality. Anyway, it was there at Chautauqua Park that the first ever Clackamas County Fair was staged on October 10th, 11th, and 12th, 1907. And by all accounts, it was a smashing success. The board of directors, which included the infamous county judge turned con man Grant B. Dimmick, engaged Nat Reese and his touring one-ring circus to put on a show for the ages, one that included a mirror maze, a premature baby in an incubator. Believe it or not, that was a common attraction in those days. And, quote, many other things familiar to patrons of carnivals and street fairs, according to the Oregonian. The Reese shows are all good and were in Portland 6 years ago under the auspices of the Woodmen of the World at the Park Blocks, the newspaper noted in a later article. Nearly 5,000 people, described by reporters as a merry, jostling crowd, attended the first fair. Oregon City, Canby, and other communities closed businesses early and crowded into whatever automobiles they could find that were headed up to Gladstone. The produce, livestock, and other exhibits that were submitted for judging drew rave reviews, with O.E. Freytag of Fern Ridge Farm earning the most bragging rights as he took home no fewer than 34 blue ribbons for his vegetables. It has been my good fortune, said the U.S. Senator Charles William Fulton in an address to the county fair growers, to have visited nearly every section of the state during the last few months, and it really does one's heart good to see these splendid products of the soil. You have a fair here that a few years ago would have been considered great for the state fair, and Clackamas County is certainly to be congratulated. One of the biggest draws Friday night was the baby show, not the incubator, but a lighthearted event in which children and families were invited to be judged on various merits. The rivalry of the mothers was keen, and the strife amongst the parents for their youngsters caused much good-natured comment, the Oregonian recorded. Mrs. McDonald won the premium offered before the largest family on the grounds, and she exhibited 11 fine specimens of the young American. One can only hope her prize was an award-winning pumpkin or other squash to feed all those hungry mouths. The Nat Reese shows ended with a bang, their ever-popular Mardi Gras and mask carnival. Hear that, guys? They were even wearing masks back in 1907. It's not that weird. The gates were open till dark to welcome all to a confetti battle royale and tour the blaze of lights along the midway. The first fair cost a grand total of $700 to put on. It did not take long, less than 2 weeks, in fact, for the city of Cambie to have designs on bringing the Clackamas County Fair into its borders. At a meeting of Cambie citizens on October 22nd, it was decided to endeavor to have the permanent location of this exposition held at Cambie. According to the newspapers of the day, it was further decided that Cambie could provide the accommodations needed and raise all funds necessary for the successful conduct of the fair, and committees were appointed to arrange the matter. They already had a spot picked out. More than 40 acres were available on what is now 4th Avenue east of town, on land once owned by Supreme Court Justice Aaron E. Waite and still held by his descendants. It took almost a year for the Cambie Development League and its 24 citizen members, led by R.S. Coe, to get things arranged, but they were ultimately successful in bringing the fair to its permanent home in 1908 in what would soon be forever established as the Clackamas County Fairgrounds. Groundbreaking was held in late July of that year, the Cambie Tribune records, to begin construction on the fairgrounds' buildings and a first-class racetrack. From the enthusiasm displayed, it is safe to predict that this will be one of the most successful county fairs in the state of Oregon, an unbiased reporter later wrote. Arriving at the grounds on that Monday, July 20th, the party halted under the cool shades of the drooping firs and could not help but make remarks on this momentous occasion. Judge Dimmick, as did all the other speakers, advised the people of Cambie to do all in their power to make the fair a success by talking and working for the enterprise in season and out of season, the Tribune said. He told the wonderful advantages to the county such an institution would be and how it could be made a success or a failure. A judge ran was said to be equally as fervent as his advocacy of measures that will ensure the complete success of the fair. Mr. Gary advised everybody to boot up, and if we hear anyone talking against the fair, to take him out and hang him, or something to that effect, the newspaper noted. His remarks were timely and well-received. Well, of course, we have much, much more to tell you about the history of our wonderful Clackamas County Fair, but that's all we have time for today. The rest will have to wait till next time on Cambie Then. As always, dear listener, thank you so much for listening. I'm James Walton. Have a great day.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. Miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Cambie, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart, and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Cambie and Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. The Cambie Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden, so round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Cambie by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Can Be Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Can Be Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.